This is On The Wire, Racing TV's podcast for the best racing previews in association with Bar One Racing.
Yeah, it's the On The Wire podcast. It's Guineas weekend at the Curragh. We're a little bit worried about the rain, but it will go ahead, if not necessarily Saturday, hopefully Monday and Sunday. I keep telling you, global warming is very, very bad. Probably won't discuss that in the show today, but I've been at two games of football in Dublin recently and the pitch has been waterlogged in places. That's in the last few weeks. This is in May. The Curragh is effectively waterlogged at the moment in May. Three successive weekends in May. Very, very worrying stuff. Anyway, let's get this out of the way. The negativity. This is Johnny Ward. I'm with Brendan Duke, John McDonald of Bar One, and Fran Berry, who continues to make waves on TV. I think Gaydon O'Brien even predicted you're going to have a big career ahead in some shape or form last weekend, Fran.
You're very kind, Johnny. Yeah, all is good. It's still raining here. I'm about 5 miles from the track and it's still spilling rain as we speak here at 12 o'clock on Friday. So hope it abates and we could do this meeting being on.
You were saying that you can't remember a Curragh card being called off.
No, and Dukie, I was asking him earlier on, I've texted one or two anoraks, local anoraks, and I haven't got a reply yet, but maybe the back end of the year. But, you know, it's just something you never factor in with the Curragh, really, because it can take such quantities of rain. But the last 24 hours, like, it's been raining for over 24 hours solid in the area now, and it looks like carrying on for the day. And we've had Rock of Gibraltar winning, Kingman winning on tough ground, and it's not beyond the bounds that it could, you know, be on and be tested. And we'll be looking to horse come stand side, but it's not ideal for a Guineas meeting either.
I remember Rafa winning it on desperate ground as well. I think George Washington was favoured that day. Dukie, you've been described as an anorak kind of by Fran. The worrying thing is, if you're an anorak that's effectively housebound, you're kind of, you know, I don't know, people are probably looking at you, but that is you at the moment.
Yeah, no, and I'm not great. I sent a little question out on Twitter. When was the last meeting in the Curragh to be abandoned? But as Fran mentioned, the racing Twitterati haven't got back to me, so it must be an awful long time ago, because these lads have long memories. I mean, I remember I put up in the best horse to ever run in Downpatrick, and I must have got 100 replies. So these lads know a thing or two about racing, but they cannot remember when the last Curragh meeting abandoned, but that was abandoned. So that's in the back of your head thinking, oh, it can't be abandoned. But if it's waterlogged at the moment and it's still raining, I'm no mathematician nor a weather forecaster for that matter, but 2 and 2 equals 4, right? It's doomed.
Yeah. Well, Patrick O'Johnny Macra, boss, is one of the most positive men I've ever met in any shape or form. And even he couldn't put that positive spin on it. Maybe the weather is just so mad that it might magically dry out over the next 24 hours.
Yeah, I think they said, I read that they've had 34 mils of rain since yesterday morning. Part of the track are waterlogged, and there's another 5 or 6 mils forecast. I mean, that tells you it has to be dodgy.
He has the air of a teacher, Johnny Mac Dukie, doesn't he? He's about to scold you for your kind of poor attendance and inability to kind of, you know, take any kind of consideration of your English teacher.
Yeah, you can plug him into any situation, though. I've been on a few nights out with him as well, and he can let his hair down with the best of them.
Yeah, I'm not sure what a night out is, but let's just reflect on our weekend naps that have gone. And we've Jim Bulger on the way. Fran had a lovely chat with him in Cool Cullen, the master of Cool Cullen, who actually, as Dukie inferred, he brought out the best china for the visit of Franberry. But last week's naps, this is actually alphabetical order. It looks like it's in an order of merit. It's the same thing, effectively. Let's start with you, Dukie. Logo Hunter won 11-2. Not only did it win, this is arguably the nicest win ever. It drifts like an absolute barge and it bolts up.
Well, indeed it did, Johnny. And this had so many factors going on. As you say, it drifted strike for the integrity of the game. And it was a reminder, and I need a regular reminder on this, because not unlike a lot of punters, I tend to focus on the short heads I was beaten, or the time the horse didn't get a run, or the fall or that. But as we know, luck is a zero-sum game. And how lucky was I with this Logo Hunter? Because Michael J. Brown, the J is for genius as far as I'm concerned, he had the option of running that horse in the three-year-old race over 6 furlongs, in which I fancied a case of you. But he it moved him to the all age race over five furlongs, which I think he's a five furlong horse, to be fair. And that way I was able to back two winners. So a lucky Sunday for me. But thank you for the reminder of that. And do remind me that next time I'm moaning about bad luck.
That's a beautiful appraisal. Every race has a story. Every horse has a story. Safari Quest story, Fran, was a second at 6-1. We can't complain with that.
Ran very well, Johnny. Just ran into a reformed character, Modus Operandi. I would have loved to have taken him on any day of the week, but under No Nonsense Ride by Shamie Heffernan, he made all and was very impressed. But Safari Quest, I wouldn't give up on him. When he gets up to 1.5 plus, there's a good race for one with him. Maybe the Ulster Derby in June, 3-year-old only, 1.5. He'd be interesting in that, and definitely a horse to watch.
Yeah, and obviously, yeah, I wouldn't disagree with him Modus Operandi. I thought he looked an absolute rogue, but he did get the job done. John McDonnell, even though you're second in the order of merit, because you're third in the order of merit because you finished second, 8-15, beaten by a stable mate. You know, it's small gains, really.
Yeah, it's pretty embarrassing. Although I wouldn't put a line through him yet, Johnny Words, but he was quite green, I think, in the closing stages.
Is he slow or lazy?
Oh, I don't think he's slow. I'd like to see him again. I wouldn't put a line through him just yet.
She's in the Game was my nap. This was well backed. Seemed to hang for much of the race. Not really sure why. And then I was kind of hoping it wouldn't finish fifth, because you don't want to finish fifth when you're on four each way places. And there was an element of satisfaction when it dropped to sixth close home. Well backed. Disappointing in some respects. Didn't run badly. I'm still going to keep some faith with her. But let's get to Jim Bulger. Fran, just some context to your discussion with Jim here. This is about an 8-minute clip in terms of him going over his some of the people that have come through the yard.
Johnny, yeah, HRI asked me to go down Monday to talk to Jim. And I've been down there once, twice before to ride out in the gallops for Pat Hughes and Christy Roach back in the day, but never had much association with Jim. And the brief was to have a chat about Poetic Flair and Max Sweeney, but we ended up talking for an hour and a quarter on camera anyway. So we went everywhere with the chat, and fascinating. And he was in great form, and he just forget to ground his covered. And I never knew Sanjavit was higher rated than Nijinsky at his peak.
Yeah, let's get to Jim now. And I might ask Fran afterwards as well. The last time I was down in Jim's, I said I'm available to ghostwrite your autobiography, and he replied, you're 13th on the list, which probably means I'm 14th on the list now. After Fran visited, and here is Fran's visit to Jim Bulger.
Bar One Racing, proud sponsors of On The Wire.
Jim, just talking about the operation here and how long it's been going. Like, your staff turnover, everything, you've got the same core principle of people that I can see year on year out.
Yes, well, you wouldn't want to believe everything you hear out there. because back at the time when, at one stage anyway, I had Kevin Manning, Paul Carberry, Anthony Malloy, Paul, I forget his second name, he was a chap from Dublin who wrote a few winners as well.
Yeah.
And Aidan O'Brien.
Yeah.
So I had six people that made their names big time afterwards. But at the time when I had those, Jim Bulger has no staff. So you wouldn't want to believe everything you hear.
You also poached a young trainer's son at one stage, and he's doing all right now, Willie Mullins.
Willie was a competent amateur before he came to me. And I thought that, you know, that he'd make a good head man. So he was an amateur rider at the time, and he wasn't supposed to be paid, so we had to find a way around that. And there was no cryptocurrency in those days. But anyway, we managed it. And he came to me anyway, and he was with me for over a year. And I have to say that he was a really good worker and a good rider, and he contributed plenty. But I had Dave Downey at the same time, and Dave is still here.
Really?
Yeah.
Really, yeah. And looking back, you mentioned Paul Carberry, Tony McKay, two different characters, two highly talented individuals, but both approached it with a different mindset.
Yeah, well, Paul was very different in those days. You wouldn't know he was in the yard.
Really?
No. And I think they all rode their first winner on Canes. He was a chestnut gelding. And I'd have, well, one of them won a maiden on him, and I think the next couple of fellas won handicaps on him. And he was the starter horse for them. It was easy enough to kind of launch their careers. I wouldn't have been able to supply them with winners at the rate that they would have been expecting.
Yeah.
Although Kevin Manning was champion apprentice on for 2 years. But Kevin could do all the lightweights, whereas the other two were more limited. But from Paul's point of view, I suppose the only thing we can claim with Paul is his style. He definitely got his style here.
Did he? Yeah. He got tidier.
Well, you look at photographs. Yeah. When, like, the lads in the yard were telling him that his daddy didn't like him because he gave him a ride in the Grand National.
Nearly killed him. Yeah.
So he came to me then the following week, and style wasn't one of the attributes you'd use when you'd be talking about him. But when he left here, he had the toned the iron heels down, flat back, the whole ball of wax, and he maintained that up to the very end. And, like, apart from Tommy Carmody, who was a very, very stylish rider, I'd say Paul, this is in jump racing now.
Yeah.
And style is not something that you would associate. I'd be shot for this. Style is not something that you associate a lot with jump riders, but Tommy Carmody had it all.
Yeah.
Charlie Swan as well.
That's right.
Paul Carberry.
Yeah.
But definitely he got the style here.
He did, yeah. Yeah. You moulded him into that flat. Yeah,
but we had nothing to do with his wildness.
Yeah. You tried to tame that probably a bit, but...
Well, no, we didn't have... It never arose here. He was very quiet, yeah.
And Tony Mackay, of course, the well-told story about his leg, but are you surprised how Willie Bullins, Aidan O'Brien, of course, Tony Mackay, how well they all went on to do when you look back, or is it...
Oh, well, I'd have been disappointed if they hadn't turned out as good as that. No, obviously not, no, but it's lovely to see it. Yeah.
What does it take for them lads to get to? Is it determination, talent, or hard work, or combination of it at all? Or?
Well, it goes back to the parents day one, you know?
Yeah.
Like I've always said that I just got them in there and generally didn't pay much attention to them for some months anyway, until I saw that they were keen to do it themselves.
Yeah.
And then at that stage, I would... you know, try to teach them and encourage them as well. But none of those required much encouragement. Like,
yeah,
they were ambitious enough.
They were here for a reason.
Anthony Mackay kept it very well hidden. He didn't give us the impression that he was quite as hungry as he became afterwards, you know.
Yes, so. Yeah. Yeah. And Kevin Manning, you've mentioned him already.
I'm going to take an opportunity now to correct how hard I was on him. When he got the fall on the gallop, that's well documented at this stage, only the sequence isn't right. He got a bad fall on the gallop and he fractured his femur, and it was a cold, frosty morning.
Yeah.
And... obviously, it was when they were going down the gallop, so the horses had to come home by the road. And I went down to see him anyway. I think it was at the 5 furlong marker on the gallop. And he was bawling his head off, so I knew he was pretty bad. So anyway, I got him reasonably relaxed, and I had a quarter sheet in the Jeep, and I put it over him, and we waited for the doctor to come. Like, we have a GP down in Loughlin Bridge.
Right.
The other Tom Foley, as he's referred to around here, and he was up here in 20 minutes anyway, and I presume he gave him maybe a shot of morphine or whatever.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And we got the ambulance for him, and the ambulance collected him at that spot on the Gallop. And I remember telling the ambulance driver to, there were a lot of potholes in the roads. I think that was early 90s.
Yeah.
And I asked him, you know, if he could take it easy with him, that he was in a bad way. But anyway, when the book was written, so he went home then at that stage, obviously, when he came out of hospital. And when he arrived back, he was about 10 stone.
Different
so
man.
The game was up.
Yes, yeah.
But I genuinely wanted to keep him for another year because I reckon if he goes to England at this stage and, you know, he's going to be schooling horses over fences and also riding novices over fences, and anything could happen to him. And the last thing he would have needed was a bad fall, another bad fall at that stage.
Yeah.
And at least because he was only 18 or 19 years old at the time, another 12 months, the bones were going to be a bit harder, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, he wasn't having any of that. And I tried every trick in the book with him to get him to stay for another year, but I wasn't having any success. So eventually, anyway, I had to say to him, look, Anthony, I said, it's only 12 months ago since you were bawling your head off down the Gallop. So, but the story got told that I told him that morning that he wasn't hardy enough to be a jump jockey. But that didn't happen for 12 months later. Yeah. And it was only to try to keep him for another year because, in my opinion, at that stage, the last thing he needed at that stage was to be going schooling over fences. But yeah. In any case, he was strong-willed and he left, and sure, everything turned out probably 100 times better than I ever expected. Mm. I don't know what he expected at that stage. He'd probably tell you that he was going to be a champion jump jockey for 20 years in a row. But I felt that anyway, that, you know, wait for 12 months, get a bit stronger and then go.
He's a fascinating man, Fran. I really enjoy listening back and watching, and just I suppose the glint in his eye talking about these people that came through the yard. And it is an amazing list of legends, basically, who came through. And you can kind of imagine, like, Paul Carberry has this reputation for being a bit of a maverick. He's actually very quiet lad.
Paul's quite he just when he got out, he liked to have a good time, and like anybody. And you know, the difference in the way they approached the game, Mackay, Aidan O'Brien to Paul, and you know, the different way they got there, and were all very successful. Willie Mullins was the little unknown one that I didn't know until this year, that he spent so much time with Jim. And you know, I think Willie said it had a big impact on him as well when he went back home to train.
Of course, the state of they're looking after the elderly, so the likes of Jim can't go racing, and Kevin Prendergast obviously barred from going racing. It's actually remarkable. Dermot Weld will be very fond of me mentioning the fact that he's in the elderly bracket as well. These lads just going really. So we don't even mention Jessica Harn. She's well into her 70s. She's not even old. That's racing. It's one of the beautiful things of racing. We have the likes of Frank Oakes riding out horse every day in his 80s, John Kiley. Nobody bats an eyelid in the game itself, but this is something we could sell.
Yes, I suppose that's true. Actually, yeah, you get these stories. It does make it harder for people to break through, I suppose, with having such long careers. I was interested when I was listening back to Fran's thing that Bulger was talking about, because I always have a special affection for trainers like old Richard Hannon or Martin Pipe or Bulger or Gordon Elliott, who came from a non-race background and made it to the very top, because I kind of feel like, look at that, from the bottom of the ladder. This is absolutely impossible because of the expense that's involved in bloodstock and the setting up. And how is it even possible that could happen? But he mentioned when he was talking to Fran that he thought he came at it because he didn't have any preconceived notions because he hadn't been. But now I still think it's a big advantage to if your father was a trainer. And I mean, when you see with the likes of John Ott, Dermot Weld, and even Aidan O'Brien, all right, from non-racing background, but he arrived into a very successful setup and took it over. But there is this Malcolm Gladwell thing, isn't there? That if you arrive at a certain point in a certain industry and you're a certain age and you just come in, it can actually be an advantage to be a complete outsider. So I thought that. So Bulger and Gladwell are sort of two thinking men, you'd have to say.
The one in fascinating point of these veteran trainers, John, that always intrigued me was that Jim Bulger, Kevin Prendergast, John Ox, and Dermot Weld, there was no obvious heir apparent, and there is no obvious heir apparent for any of the four. John Ox has gone, left the trainer in ranks. Obviously, the other lads are getting on a bit as well, and it's going to leave a massive, massive hole.
Yeah, although Dermot Weld has two sons still heavily involved. Young Chris is quite heavily involved. Mm. Jim Bulger, he reminds me of the school teacher that just used to scare the bejesus out of you, and you just did not mess with him, you know? But you could have nothing but admiration for him. He's a self-made man who's still very true to his roots. He follows Wexford GAA strongly. He's always in Crow Park. And you could have nothing but real admiration for what he's achieved in life.
I love as well when you talk to these guys, they invoke these memories of yesteryear that preceded yourself in the sense of these horses. And we always talk about the legacy of Aidan O'Brien, but arguably the legacy of Vincent O'Brien is felt even more in Irish racing today because of Northern Dancer, and a particular son of his was only the winner of the Guineas in 84.
And on the far side, Proceda with Sadler as well. So Creta moving up to challenge. Out on the near side is Fiery Kelton there, followed by Rousselon and Capture Him and Hegemony, Tom Ryland and Seafaring. They're inside the last two furlongs. Sadler as well, So Creta, and over on the far side is the French horse Proceda coming on the near side, Rousselon with Fiery Kelt, but it's Sadler's Wells in the lead as they race inside the final furlong. Sadler's Wells, Proceda and Secreto as they race towards the finish. Sadler's Wells with Proceda on the inside and going to the line. It's Sadler's Wells from Proceda, then Secreto, and there followed by Capture Him and Rousselon, and then Fiery Kelt and Hegemony and Tom Ryland, and the last to finish is Seafaring.
We obviously are all a bit too young for Sadler's Wells memories, but I don't know, Fran, it's absolutely staggering, these little moments that can completely change the course of history. And that bloodline that came to Europe from the Northern Dancer line, I don't think even Northern Dancer was the original horse that they'd gone over to buy or procure. Obviously, Vincent O'Brien saw something in him. And obviously then, I sound like Aidan O'Brien here, but obviously the legacy of Galileo afterwards.
It's a great story, isn't it? And just on that Irish Guineas that Sadler's Wells won, George McGrath rode the winner on him. He was one of Vincent's home-based riders. Big day for him. And I looked at that picture, that race, for a long time because Cassius Moosen was second on a French-trained horse and he did toe in the iron and real, you know, innovative with his American style at the time. But anyway, getting back to Sadler's Wells, Johnny, great story. It's well documented. Pat Edry had a choice of which stallion nomination to take. And did he go for El Gran Señor because he thought Sadler's Wells wouldn't make it? And the rest, one was a dud and the rest is history with Sadler's Wells. And his influence over the breed, culminating in Galileo, is immense, isn't it? It's a huge thing for a small horse to maybe at the time they thought wasn't their top one.
I'll put you on the spot here. How's Frankie going to get on? It's been a good time for him of late.
It has been a good time of late, and it's been needed because I think for the quality of mares he's been getting and everything, it's been a little bit okay only, wasn't it? And it seems to be
they have their quirks a lot of them.
Well, he did, didn't he? You know, we'll never know how good Sir Henry Cecil and his team were to manage him and get him there. If he's in another trainer's hands, he might have bombed out after 6 months. And, you know, that's going to come true. But the main thing is they've got a big engine. Needs to be possibly with the right trainer that can harness them. You know, they're keen. They've got to, you know, they try to be faster than what they're really intended to be as middle distance horses, if you like. And I think it's a lot to do with who's got control of them and who's dealing with them with his progeny even now. Yeah,
That's very interesting, Juki, because it is interesting if you look at Galileo's sons. Galileo is, like, time and time again, Galileo gets these hardy horses. Distance-wise, they can be quite versatile, very much a will to win, can be quite ground versatile. He hasn't necessarily produced a superstar stallion yet.
No, it is interesting. And again, I hark back to a previous thing, maybe when you were talking to Bulger, or someone was talking to Bulger, and he mentioned at the time when he stumbled onto Galileo that they were worried that there wasn't going to be a top-class sire son of Sadler's Wells. So maybe as a sire of sires, Galileo will come late to the party as well, because you're right, there is... Well, I mean, Frankel has done well now. I take Fran's point, he was 125 grand. He's getting the pick of mares. But, I mean, he has done well. He has produced some top horses. And there's still Churchill in the wings. So Churchill is my great hope for a stallion, because he's the best-looking horse I've ever seen. He was teak tough, very durable, very genuine. I know genetics is a tricky business, and you're dealing with all these outcrosses, and Coomer have so many mares by Galileo that they can't send to him. But I just can't see how Churchill doesn't make it as a stallion. He's too pretty to fail.
Let's get to the car on Saturday. It's exciting times, Guineas weekend. My nap of the weekend, by the way, is the exact opposite to Frankel. He's by a sire who's been sent a load of very bad mares and has had one winner from 30-odd runners, I think. Yet I'm napping one of his progeny at the weekend. Before all of that, here's the Curra. And last year's winner was a first for jockey and rider.
Is Siskin, and then Armory in between horses with Fiscal Rules, and pulled out to the outside is Lope Fernandi, and then Monarch of Egypt. They're racing on towards the final two furlongs. Fort Mars is pressed by. Royal Lytham won from the rail. Here with a sweeping run is Lope Fernandi, and Sinewan in between horses. Angled out is Siskin. Then Armory as they race to the final furlong. Lope Fernandi hits the front, but here comes Siskin on the near side. After them is Sinewan racing up towards the finish, and it's Joe Lines' push button Siskin who's drawing away to land the first ever classic for Colin Keane and Joe Lines. Vatican City is second, then Armory, Lope Fernandi, and Fiscal Rules.
Yeah, there was that was obviously the first Guineas, I guess, run behind closed doors, but not the second, sadly. But let's not get into that, because I think we're all really pissed off that we can't go racing at the moment. We'll go straight into the Curra card. And actually, let's go straight into the Curra Guineas, because, Fran, I reckon, what did Jim actually say about Max Sweeney? I had a serious bet on him this morning, because I can't see him out of the frame with this weather.
Look, Johnny, he was very positive about him. Things went awry in Leopardstown, and he had a bad scope and a nasal discharge next morning. The Pearl's a training horse. He was perfectly fine on a scope on Friday morning, ran Sunday, and then had a nasal discharge on the Monday. I thought he actually, if you allow for that, he actually ran well for a long way. If you view dropping back down in trip, he was a little bit sluggish initially out of gates, but once he got into his stride, he travelled really strongly, and if it was the nasal discharge affecting him under pressure, you know, you can make allowance for that. He's never performed on good ground either, and all his form has been soft and heavy. He won obviously at the Curra, he won at Doncaster on testing ground, and at the time of speaking of this, given the ground conditions, if we're racing on Saturday at the Curra, I'd be very surprised to see Poetic Flair pitch up, and I'd expect Kevin Manning to switch to him just because of the ground, and after running in France with the St. James's Palace to come, I just can't see the upside to running Poetic Flair if Max Sweeney is the Max Sweeney that we hope is there tomorrow on conditions to really play to his strengths.
Do you fancy him as well?
I do, yeah. I backed him and Van Gogh yesterday. I just think they're two that will handle the ground against the field, and you know, you can go down to the rest of them, but you know they will handle the ground.
Johnny Mac, talk to me about your specials from Bar One this weekend, and talk to me about the price of the winner, Max Sweeney.
Yeah, Johnny, Max Sweeney at the moment, as we record this, is currently 10-1. But as Fran said,
10-1, get on.
We're going to be price boosting all the favourites across the weekend of the Curra, Johnny, across all channels. BarOneRacing.com, on the app, and as well as that for bets on the phone. And we've got a code as well for those listening to this right now. We've got a code. OTW2000 is the code to use, and there's a €10 free bet awaiting listeners of On The Wire there. That's for new and existing account holders. I think the lads might throw up a graphic as well regarding that. But it's a good offer there for On The Wire listeners. 10 euro free bet for customers.
What's your Guinea selection?
I am going to go with Wembley. I think it's interesting Ryan Moore has stuck loyal to him. Aidan O'Brien has gone back with the same three that he went to Newmarket with, yet they were walloped in Newmarket. What can we read from that?
Well, I mean, Dukie, whoever, I heard of a 50 grand each way bet on Battleground, back in a war front each way, who hasn't won yet as a three-year-old. Oh my God, but even still, what an absolute flop. And he'll obviously bounce back here, go 12 better or whatever it is and win.
Yeah. Payborn are going to be on to us again with this war front. I need to wedge him into the conversation. McSweeney's a very limited horse, but of course, this is such an equaliser, this ground.
Very limited horse. He won the Racing Post.
Yeah, on bad ground. Okay, so he's a very one-dimensional horse, is perhaps what I should have said. But of course, this is the worst flat ground.
In the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. There is a lot of these horses are not going to cope with the ground.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. So I don't know, you're kind of putting me off because I like McSweeney being in the race for Poetic Flair, because I think they're going to let McSweeney bowl along with his stamina short. And this will help Poetic Flair, of course, because it'll help him to settle. He was, again, a fraction keen in Longchamp, which he was as well in Newmarket, but the Longchamp race was a complete mess. He could just, Manning did well to settle him, in fairness, which was his first priority, but he could just never get out with the stop-start nature of it, could never really, this horse is more of a grinding miler. He really Palace Pier-esque, not as good obviously, but he really lets his long stride go, and he could never get a run. Would definitely have been second with a run and a truly run race. Who's to say? Handled soft ground in Leopardstown last back end. This would be a different kettle of fish altogether. But I just kind of half felt that the market was overreacting to the French run. So Poetic Flair would be my nominal selection, but I have to say, your confidence is unnerving me a bit.
Well, yeah, we have the other group race as well, GQ. We have the Marble Hill Stakes Group 3, Weatherlands Ireland Greenland Stakes Group 2, and our other group race in is the Landwide Stud, which is at 355. They're absolute certainty they're going to be non-runners here. The likes of Cadamosto will be presumably the tissue favourite. Marble Hill, he surely won't be running. A couple of other Caravaggios thereabouts. Antonell's the rest of the card, Juki. I'll give mine first of all. La Barossa, I was initially tipping La Barossa off and then the ground changed, so I'm going to go with McSweeney in the Guineas. Epona plays, I think, as much as the favourite's going to be very hard to beat in the 355. She's a lovely Australia bred horse, handles the ground well. I think she's going to be value. Montego Bay as well, no-name ever horse, doesn't look badly handicapped at all, and has handicap experience in the 530. And my final selection is my nap of the weekend is Sheer Chance, who's by Fulbright, who's had one winner so far in all, but this horse will have no ways and is going be a price. Juki.
Yeah, it's so difficult with the ground. I thought the one horse that was particularly overpriced at the moment was Sanila in the Greenlands. I make that a match between the top two. I don't think Royal Commando will handle the ground. Summer Grand is better on top of the ground. Speaking Colours has a lot to prove. So I thought it was a match between Glenchiel and Sanila. You can currently get around 9-4, 9-2, those two. That looks way too big for Sanila. She was a neck behind Glenchiel over the course and distance last year, getting £3. She gets £6 today. Glenchiel, possibly he's improved. I'll grant you that. But she's improved as well. I mean, she was third in the Abbe. Then she blew out slightly in the champion sprint at Ascot. But that's fillies in October. We'll give her a pass. Boy, Toomey. I mean, everything he runs just runs well. She has form fresh and form on heavy ground. I didn't see how she could be a 9-2 shot. And my other one for Saturday is my nap. Do you want it now or do you want me to?
Sure, yeah. We'll keep it under wraps. And let's get to Johnny Mack's Saturday selections.
I like Castle Star in the Marble Hill, Johnny. He's had three runs already. He's fairly battle-hardened. That should stand to him on Saturday. I agree with Juki as well. Sinela, her Curra form is very good. Meigler have just purchased her. She has form fresh as well. She won on her seasonal debut last year. And I think she could put it up to Glenchiel. And I thought Epona plays maybe in the Phillies race.
And Fran?
Yeah, Sonalia, I'm totally in on her. I can see where everybody's coming and do like her. Toomey's unbelievably going well, and she won, she won first time up from last year at Cork, wasn't it? So, yeah, with the £3 swing, I'd definitely be in on her. That 425 Phillies handicap, Wanda might be all that well handicapped, but it will love conditions. Number three, New Emerald Bay, Johnny Murtis went runner. He's got two in it. That one bolted up in ready fashion in Punchestown and really testing ground last year. Didn't run as bad, maybe, as the finishing position would suggest at the current, the first day of the season, and is definitely maybe going to be a price because it might be Johnny's apparent second string.
The Guineas last year, and this is something now. The first nine home in the Guineas last year were all by different sires. One was by, the second horse was by Deep Impact, third horse by Warfront, and the first horse, dear viewer, probably had the distinction of being potentially, I don't know, the first classic winner ever who won her maiden in Thurles.
Racing on past the two mark, Valeria Messaline and Billy Lee from Peaceful and Shamie Heffernan, and New York Girl is making ground in between horses for Shane Cross. Then So Wonderful Albina has work to do. On the outside is Fancy Blue as Peaceful hits the front from So Wonderful New York Girl. Valeria Messaline awakens. Fancy Blue is running on the outside, but it's Peaceful in the lead as they run up towards the finish. It's Peaceful, it's owner Michael Tabor's day. Peaceful won the 1,000 guineas from Fancy Blue, So Wonderful New York Girl, and Even So.
12 months on, lads. It's all about being gorgeous here, isn't it? I mean, this filly, we've watched her as a two-year-old, and it was all about soft ground for her. We obviously had that little bit of an issue in that maybe Joseph Soros has been a little bit in and out this year, and obviously we haven't seen Pretty Gorgeous yet. Last seen the 9th of October. Juki, she just wins.
I'm very surprised at the betting. I mean, it's basically, she's joined Fab with Mark at the moment. I thought she should be clear favourite. I mean, this, again, heavy ground is a huge equaliser, but she's so effective on soft ground. She's a big, scopey filly. Imagine she's going to come forward from 2-3. She already has the best form in the race. I wouldn't like to be in 5-4 about her.
Yeah, I agree, Fran. To be honest, I think, you know, I always a slight bit worried about a horse reappearing in late May. We haven't seen since October, but she was rock solid as a two-year-old. If anything, she should be better at three, given her physique and so forth. You've wintered well. Has she wintered well, and will she win?
It's camera, Johnny. It just makes me look healthy, you know. So, if the Pretty Gorgeous that we've seen in the Phillies Mile pitches up, she will win. Devised before Newmarket, it wasn't really a surprise from what you were hearing on the grapevine that she didn't pitch up. What are we on, 3 weeks from then? Or the ground is made for her. She's got everything in her favour. And if she's anywhere near her peak, she'll win. Joan of Arc, they've always rated her highly. I think when she went to Dundalk, they couldn't believe she got beaten. And she's improved her racing. She was a ready winner the last day in that Guineas trial at Leopardstown. And I would give her a shout. And it's very hard to find an angle outside of them at the prices. No speak, Alexander maybe will handle the ground and is.
What about Feb Rover?
One in France in soft ground, ran very well in the Guineas. Was she strong at the line, or was she out on her feet in the last 50 yards at Newmarket? And if she was, she won't get home to Curragh.
Presumably would be a first classic success for her own stallion, Gutafan. But Johnny Mac, what's the betting here? Because I just think the concern with having a bet on this race, and it applies to the Curragh on Saturday as well, is if you're battered with rule fours, it kind of, as mother would say, it takes the good out of it. So there is that concern, because if there are a lot of rule fours, I want horses to run that won't win, to help the price of the winner here. Presumably is going to be Pretty Gorgeous if she's trained on. What price is bar one?
Yeah, we've gone 9-4, Johnny, on the revised prices. Joan of Arc and Pretty Gorgeous, 9-4. 9-2, Fever Over. Ken Condon's filly, Miss Amulet, 8. Jesse's filly, No Speak Alexander, 10s. And we've gone 16-1 bar. I think you'd be ploughing in, Juki, at 9-4.
Looks a very big price to me, John.
Rest of the card on Sunday, we obviously have another Group 1, an all-age Group 1, the Tattersalls Gold Cup. And we spoke about the Sons of Galileo potentially being, you know, the next heir apparent or whatever. Australia has his own claims. A lot of them look like they want time. Broome is probably the best of them so far, thereabouts. And just has a likeable way of going, this horse, Fran. If you back him, you're kind of, you only know you're beat if you're basically 10 lengths down at the furlong pole, because he finds plenty for pressure. And interesting that Ryan Moore is riding him ahead of Serpentine, despite the fact that they've actually, there's a £6 official rating differential in the Tattersalls Gold Cup.
And Tiger Mott as well, Johnny, of course, who I'd say could have been Aidan's best trio last year if he got a clear run of things. What he done in Leopardstown, beating Silence Please by 4 lengths on that occasion, was really taken. And I wouldn't expect to see the Tiger Mott at his peak on Sunday, but I'd watch him with interest as the year goes on. Broome, this is a minimum trip and he's getting away with it. With conditions that he handles, he probably will get away with it on Sunday, but a mile and a half, he'll keep improving once he gets up and trip. And he's back to where we probably seen him as a three-year-old, going into the Derby as a three-year-old when he was after winning Durrenstown and that. And it's hard to see beyond him. If you're looking to play with the eight runners, I suppose you'd have to play Helvic Dream possibly each way, who will handle the conditions and has a liking for the track, but shouldn't be good enough. Or Search for a Song, if it becomes a real stamina test, she'll be finishing well, but hard to see her win the Group 1 at 10 though, really.
She's actually, just looking at her here, if this is correct, she's never run on ground worse than good yielding, which surprised me. Obviously, by Galileo, the Polish Gym, not sure it'll necessarily work out for her. I think a stamina staff sap in mile and two will definitely work out for her. And she ran very well at Leopardstown. Anthony Nelson, the rest of the card for you, Fran.
Yeah, Johnny, in the Galileo, that's a race to watch, obviously, with the declarations. Two three-year-olds following. Taipan, I think, is going to be a different proposition on soft ground. He was a ready winner on heavy ground at Nace last year on debut, and he ran extremely well both times at Leopardstown behind Bolshoi Ballet on good ground. You get him on soft ground, he'll be a different proposition on Sunday.
Another Frankel that's not entirely straightforward.
I think he's just slow. he's a galloper, this lad. He needs a mile and a half. He's an Irish Derby written all over him, / Ledger. Not an Epsom horse by any means, but he has his ground on Sunday now at this trip, and he should be at his peak for it. And a horse that's going to go under the radar and keep improving as the year goes on, but will love to cut in the ground. Max Mayhem beat Nottingham and Roscommon, but done it very well. It was beaten by a smart horse in the making of Johnny Murtis of Cork, Ottoman Empire. Definitely a horse that's just under radar and could step up on Sunday also.
Juki, Sunday's card for you.
Very tricky, Johnny. An old friend of Fran's, Fame and Acclaim, will surely go well in the mile handicap at 4:20. One of the class angles in the race, ran really well in the link and beat 2.25 lengths. He gets, I think, a £6 swing with Lafayette, something like that. Backed it up by running Raise You to a neck in the Curra. Another good handicap, no problem with the ground. The boy McMonagall takes off 5. Now, the 16 runners at the moment would be a miracle if they all run. So it might be a win-only project, but I'll have something small on him.
Often, if you speak to kind of footballers, they may not respect your opinion if you aren't a professional. And I do think there's an element of that if the likes of I are, you know, trying to figure out who's a good jockey, who isn't a good jockey, because the technical nuances are probably a bit like go over my head to an extent. But Fran, Juki mentioned Dylan Brown McMonagall there. Is he the number one prospect in Ireland at the moment from the apprentices, or are you more a Sam Ewing man, or is it one of the crosses, or who's the guy or girl you expect to go to the top?
Dylan is probably the most polished of them all at the minute. He's getting great opportunities with Joseph Baron Smady. Does he ride him in York on Saturday? I think he might be going over there. And, typical of Joseph, what he done with Shane Cross, he's pitching him into group races whilst claiming, and he's answering every call. He's most complete at the minute. Sam Ewing has a lot of potential and will continue to improve. He needs, you know, to step up a little bit this year now that £7 claim is gone, but he will do. The Shane Cross, he's a beautiful rider. Like, he's a little bit restricted. He can't ride much below 9 stone. And Scott McCullough, if you're looking for a £5 claim or nine stone plus, he's great value for £5. He's back from the UK had a great time over there, but his home with Rising Weight, and he gave Pepperoni Pete, I thought, a ride of maturity last week in Nace. Not doesn't get a lot of rides, but he makes the most of them.
Would you go down the agency route?
No, Jerry Maguire.
Yeah. Too much.
Or Kevin O'Reilly.
That's just you're probably never off the phone, and I'd say 10 years past your buy in two. It's just it's that manic. But Johnny Mack, just briefly on that, I've been really impressed by Siobhan Rutledge's kind of progress at Dundalk as well. You know, a lot of the stuff about, you know, female sport and all that, you know, we don't push racing enough, but at the same time we don't have enough female riders in Ireland, and this one is an outlier, and we both like Dundalk, and it's been great to see her progress over the winters.
Yeah, she was excellent on some pretty average horses. She had a couple of big price winners there. It was a 33-1 shot one night she struck on. She looked very, very tidy, and she won on Drakensberg. The Mouse Doctor she might have won on as well up there, and
she did.
Yeah, she seemed a very, very good effect. Lovely girl as well, very pleasant girl, and she's well able to talk and sell herself.
Yeah, unlike the four of us, she's actually a good talker. What do you like the rest of the card?
I thought Aesop in the handicap, Tom Madden rides, was a winner down at Cork, is £4 higher. He is a chance. He's well related, that Aesop, and I think he could have a good chance, proven on soft ground.
It's time for the weekend naps, and unfortunately, we all have one on Saturday, except for Fran, in which case you could do some sort of a lucky 15, but you'll probably be able to do it anyway, to be fair. We will have the declarations. Juki, it's time for a bit of Holly for you.
Yes, Holly Golightly, of course, who was the she was the character of Breakfast at Tiffany's. A good film. Long time since I've seen it, but Audrey Hepburn in a cocktail dress, you could live with that. But this Holly Golightly is an attractive proposition as well. So she's out.
You've gone from Audrey Hepburn to attractive proposition in a horse seamlessly.
Well, that's why I get the big books, Charlie. Segways. Anyway, Holly is out of Cassandra Go. You may remember her, Jeff Ragtrainer, very talented mare, got better with age. I think she ended up finished in second in a group one on her last run. This filly, so she was still very green on second start in Dundalk at the end of March. Gary Carroll gave her a really good ride, got her to settle and relax. She was a bit clueless off the bridle, but she showed the benefit of that in Gorham. Gary Carroll rode her again, jumped out in front and saw off three fillies. I'm not sure about the strength of that form, but at least the three behind her were the top three in the betting. And with her pedigree, she handled soft ground in Goran. So again, you'd be hopeful that she'd handle the ground here. Possibility of a tactical edge. There's a bit of pace, but not a whole pile. And being on the pace and the curve is never a bad thing. And first time CTK, it can't be a bad thing either. So I thought the stars have aligned for Holly Golightly.
Yeah, it's actually a complete anomaly that Colin Keane rides for the first time. Fran, you've spoken about the son of Frankel, but you have gone with Taipan in 205, the Curragh on Sunday.
I have, I think everything stacks off for him on Sunday. If he's going to be a potential Group 1 type horse to run a Ledger or an Irish Derby, he's got to be competitive with his preferred conditions on Sunday. The two runs in Leopardstown should leave him right, and he will handle ground far better than a lot of his rivals on Sunday, Johnny.
Johnny Mack, you've gone with Castle Star.
Yeah, I put up Fozzie Stats Juvenile in the Marble Hill, Johnny. Now, the race could fall apart. He's had three runs so far. He's been second on his first two starts, won a listed race last time. He's had three runs, as I said. They should stand him in good stead, and we'll put him up to win the Marble Hill.
Yeah, we obviously had Jim Bulger as a guest with Fran, and it's Jim's Max Serini, who, if he doesn't go well in the Guineas tomorrow, there's something wrong, because a lot of these horses are not going to handle the ground. That's in the 320. And of course, Dickie, what a man. I mean, he basically got this horse to win a classic. So he got this horse to win a Group 1, effectively the weekend of the anniversary of Terence Max Serini.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, the things that can happen when you run horses, Johnny. I mean, JSB puts the race in racehorses. He gives them ample opportunities to coincide with all sorts of anniversaries, because every day is an anniversary, isn't it? And if you run your horses every day, we can just put two and two together. What a man he is. And I think he's going to run, if he gets the chance, I think he's going to run both these horses in the Guineas. And hopefully, for our sake, one of them will win.
Lads, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, as Aidan O'Brien might say. A pleasure to talk with the Curragh, and I hope you all have a great weekend.
You too, John. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, boys.
Fran is happy out there getting outdoor drinking time next week, Fran, is it?
It is, and the weather's meant to pick up, Johnny. So, yeah, we're getting there. And if it's called off tomorrow, we might have to do a bit of indoor drinking. But anyway.
we're all off to Kilcullen, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you for listening to the Racing TV podcast On The Wire. We hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe to be alerted as soon as the next episode is available.